Good morning, and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Mo H., and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from Northern California. Today is Tuesday, November the 20th, and it's the 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting. And we are reading from the Big Book, and we are on page 158, starting with the fifth paragraph. So you see there were, through three paragraphs, ending with relieving much worry and suffering. And the comments will be on all the paragraphs. And today's readers for the 12 Steps, Becca R., the 12 Traditions, Jody E.Q., and the readers of the text are Leslie M., Mary Jane Z., and Sherry K.B. The share ID for Monday, November 19th, 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting is 12,197. That's 12197. And for Tuesday, November 20th, the 7 a.m. meeting, Eastern Time meeting, is 12,201. That's 12,000. That's 12201. The OA preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose, OA's fifth tradition, states each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. And I will now ask Becca R. to read the 12 steps.
Hi, this is Becca R. Can I be heard?
Yes, Becca.
All right. These are the 12 steps. One, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrong. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. And I pass. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Becca R., and I'll now ask Jody E.Q. to read the 12 traditions.
Good morning. My name is Jody E.Q., gratefully recovered in California. The 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. Number one, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants, they do not govern. Three, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. Four, each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. Five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. Six, an OA group but never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name. to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. OA, as such, ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you, and I pass.
Thank you, Jody EQ. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass, and then press star 1 to mute your phone again. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker should be muted. And today we resume our study. And we are in the Big Book. We are on page 158, starting with the fifth paragraph. So you see there were, through three paragraphs, ending with relieving much worry and suffering. And the comments will be on all those paragraphs. And I am now going to ask Leslie M. to get us started. Good morning, Leslie.
Good morning, Mo. Thank you so much for your service and Team Tuesday for their service. Thank you. I'm Leslie M. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from Long Island, New York. So you see, there were three alcoholics in that town who now felt they had to give to others what they had found or be sunk. After several failures to find others, a fourth turned up. He came through an acquaintance who had heard the good news. He proved to be a devil-may-care young fellow whose parents could not make out whether he wanted to stop drinking or not. They were deeply religious people, much shocked by their son's refusal to have anything to do with the church. He suffered horribly from his sprees, but it seemed as if nothing could be done for him. He consented, however, to go to the hospital, where he occupied the very room recently vacated by the lawyer. He had three visitors. After a bit, he said, "The way you fellows put this spiritual stuff makes sense. I'm ready to do business. I guess the old folks were right after all." So one more was added to the fellowship. All this time, our friend of the hotel lobby incident remained in that town. He was there 3 months. He now returned home, leaving behind his first acquaintance, the lawyer, and the devil-may-care chap. These men had found something brand new in life. Though they knew they must help other alcoholics if they would remain sober, that motive became secondary. It was transcended by the happiness they found in giving themselves for others. They shared their homes, their slender resources, and gladly devoted their spare hours to fellow sufferers. They were willing, by day or night, to place a new man in the hospital and visit him afterward. They grew in numbers. They experienced a few distressing failures, but in those cases, they made an effort to bring the man's family into a spiritual way of living, thus relieving much worry and suffering. Once again, I'm Leslie M. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from Long Island, New York. And the things that really you know, stood out for me today is, alcoholic number four said, the way you fellows put this spiritual stuff makes sense. I'm ready to do business. And that's how I felt this past February after I'd had a relapse. And, I've been in OA 28 years and I hadn't found the answer. However, this time around, God first gave me the ability to be honest, and he has since given me the ability to remain abstinent and to share this with others. And that's the other thing that these paragraphs were speaking about, was giving to others what they had found and the happiness they found in giving themselves for others. And that's the interesting thing for me, because I've always been, although I've appeared to be the nice one, I've always been very manipulative behind the scenes, and still wanted to, and was selfish, wanted things to go my way. However, I found that as soon as I reach out my hand to help someone else, that, you know, my thinking changes. My recovery is very precious to me. And the last time I got recovered, I didn't do a lot of reaching out to help others, be of service to others. So I know this time, you know, having learned that, you know, that's something that I need to do every day, is, you know, put out my hand and say, let me share something with you, or just ask how I can be of service to someone else, because that gets me out of myself, and I can see the world. I see the world in a much different way now. My thinking is much less distorted than it has been in my life. And with that, I pass. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Leslie M., and let me remind everybody where we're at. We're on page 158, starting at the bottom of the page, the fifth paragraph. So you see there were three alcoholics. Going over onto page 159, ending with relieving much worry and suffering. And I'm now ready to take names of those who'd like to share.
Hi, this is Charles H.
Charles.
Patty
B.
Wendy M.
Roger E.
Julie E.B. I got Charles H., Julie E.B. There was a bunch in between there.
Dossie P.
Patty
B.
Wendy M.
Marissa E.
Marissa.
Beatrice O.
Beatrice O. Let's stop there. We'll get the rest of you on the next go. Beatrice O. Marissa E. Wendy M. Okay, I have Charles H., Julie E.B., Vasa. I didn't get your initial. Roz G., Wendy M., Marissa E., and Beatrice O. Okay, Charles, get us started.
Thank you kindly. Is this Mo H.?
Yes, it is. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Mo. Thank you. Thank you for your service. This is Charles H., a recovered compulsive overeater. And I want to drill down where it says, after that, a fourth turned up. So the first three, I just like to talk about, in the doctor's opinion, Bill W., and this is going to be a time phrase type of share. In the doctor's opinion, it says, Dr. Silkworth was talking about Bill W., he put into practical application at once. And then Dr. Bob on page 156, it says, one morning he took the bull by the horns, and at midnight he came home tired. And if you look in the forward to the second edition, it says, our very first case, a desperate one, recovered immediately. And now, so those are the first three. They showed us back in 1935 that they recovered very quickly. Something happened between June 1935 and I would say November 2018. I don't know if I was waiting for the shoe to drop, but I thank God that I was disturbed. And some of our pioneers on this line, they got football numbers too. Something happened, right? You know, my friend Harlan G, 40 years in the program, he's almost coming up on 20 years. Kim G, 18 or 17 years in the program. She's coming up on 8 or 9 years. So, you know, it took us a long time, right? These guys were desperate. And the Devil May Care fellow that they're talking about, Ernie G, he was skeptical, right? But these guys, You know, those three guys smashed Ernie G's perception of reality. They didn't care if they hurt his feelings because he was already hurt. He was wounded, beaten, and broken. And he said, man, the way you guys put this spiritual thing, I'm ready to do business. So I'm going to disturb somebody this morning and ask, are you ready to do business? And when we're talking with proteges, we got to tell them the truth. Because they're broken anyway. If they're broken and they're meek, then they're ready to do business. I'm telling you right now, I'm ready to do business. And I speak the truth. The truth is the big book. And I don't have to defend the truth. The truth defends itself, just like a lion and an eagle. So with that, I pass. Thank you, Mo H, for your service.
Okay. Thank you, Charles, for getting us started. Julie E.B., followed by Dassey P.
Hi, this is Julie E.B., gratefully recovered in Colorado. And I think it's very interesting how there were three in the town. They had to give to others. Several failures to find others. The fourth turned up through an acquaintance, not even through what they were doing. And he had heard the good news. And, you know, they put in some things, devil may care fellow. Parents had a lot of judgments. They weren't sure. They were deeply religious. And it's interesting that what he says is the old folks were right as he began to try it. Because for me, even the deeply religious, I didn't get me quite far enough. But there was something I saw in the fellowship, a kind of love and acceptance. You know, as it says at the very beginning of the big book, yes, that's happened to me. I felt that, and most importantly, maybe this will work for me. And I think that's just a great way to identify in. And every day I experience that on this line and in my recovery. That happened to me. And now I can say what happened to me is tried to see if some old-timers in this program or newcomers in this program, maybe they're right. Maybe I have to look at things from an entirely different angle. And I felt that. I felt that pain, and I also now feel that hope. And maybe this could work for you because it certainly worked to change my life. My life is not all unicorns and rainbows, as they say, but I feel blessed to have recovery. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you, Julie E.B. Dossie P., followed by Roz G.
Hey, this is Dossie. Thanks so much. Yeah, I think that a few of the things that stood out for me in the reading were, one, you know, the fact that, I mean, this is kind of hammered in throughout the book, but no matter how much his family cared about him or was trying to kind of like show him the way, I guess, he just didn't want to hear it and like kind of push that even further away, you know, and it could be religion or health. Like, I know that my family cared so much about me and you know, they cared so much about me and they really wanted me to be healthy and was like trying to tell me all these things about what I should do. I couldn't hear it. I couldn't hear anything. And that's the power of one compulsive eater to the other, you know, where his family couldn't get through to him, you know, and they kind of thought it was hopeless. All of a sudden, these like random strangers share their experience and then he's in. He's like, all right. I'm in. Let's do this, you know. And so that was really powerful, just like to understand. I always quote whoever, I don't remember who it was on the line on OA a long time ago, but they said that, you know, I am medicine for someone when no one else can be. That's so empowering to think about. Like, you are medicine for someone where no one else can get through to them. You have the ability to save someone's life just by sharing your experience, strength, and hope. And then the other part that stood out was the part about the 12-step work, about how, you know, in the beginning they knew that they had to carry the message to stay sober. But then that motive went from being like a self-centered motive to actually just really wanting to do it. And that reflects that transformation that happens in the program. Like, we start out doing, a lot of us, I mean, some people find, I know for sure I did not want to make outreach calls and sponsor, no way. But my sponsor said, you know, if you want to stay sober, this is what you have to do. And if you want to keep sobriety, this is what you have to do. And eventually over time, it became not just something that I had to do, but something that I genuinely wanted to do, that I genuinely got excited about, to help someone who is still struggling and pass on what I've been gifted. So with that, I'll pass. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you, Dossie P. Roz G, followed by Wendy M.
Good morning. My name is Roz G, and I'm a compulsive overeater in Los Angeles County, walking my dogs out here. And I just, there's one thing, somebody after the meeting, what the heck is Devil May Care Chap? I don't get that. But anyway, so what I was thinking about was giving of our slender resources and giving of our spare hours. I was on a big book workshop. In fact, I still am. But I remember this person who was leading the workshop was talking about how we give of ourselves. And he was talking to some AA guy who gave so much time. And he asked him, how do you do that? He said, well, I give a lot of, you know, I make my family, you know, my priority. But other than that, AA owns me. And the guy got choked up hearing that. You know, will I get to a point where I could say OA owns me, and that I'm willing to give that much time and the slender resources? You know, before program, I wanted to compete with people about what gifts I were giving, and would my gifts be the best gifts? Or it's Mother's Day, I'm going to make sure all the mothers in my family have a gift, when all we really needed to do was share a meal and laughter and time. And I believe that the best gifts that I can give to people are things from my heart, not how much money I spent on them. And when it comes to program, the gifts that I have been given are, you know, phone calls or experience or even a slogan that somebody says that sticks with me in my head. Those are slender but powerful gifts. And I just want to come to the point where OA will own me. But I mean that, of course, in a balanced and spiritual way. Not that I'm just people pleasing and giving so that I'm tired and I don't have any energy for anything else. But I love that saying. And with that, I pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Roz G. Wendy M., followed by Marissa E.
Yes, good morning. It's Wendy M., gratefully recovered in Boulder, Colorado. And I thank God for the entire abstinence I have this morning. It frees me up. It allows me to be happy, joyous, and free, and not in the food. And if you are suffering on the line, please call me or whoever you need to call, because we're all here for you. We're all here for you. So, and thank you, Mo, for your service. So it says here, they had to give to others what they had found or be sunk, right? And this is true for me, not just working with others specifically in Overeaters Anonymous, but just in my life. If I'm in a relationship and I'm not giving to others and I'm only thinking about what I'm going to get, I'm in trouble super quickly, right? Because my life gets teeny. I get teeny. Things get small, and I have to control you or the outcome or the situation in order to get from you what I think I need to get, you know, because I came into this program as a user, as a taker, right? What can I get from the situation? And even today, if I'm in that situation with somebody, it feels awful, and God makes it so. God makes it so it feels awful to be a user and a taker. And thank God, and that's the recovered state, right? That I don't think the way I used to think. I don't act the way I used to act. And when I am using and taking, I feel it immediately, right? It feels that scratchy, itchy, awful feeling. And working with others, of course, for me is a spiritual experience, right? It's a changed state. When I'm working with others, I am in God's world. I'm in God's lap, right? It's esteemable. I'm useful. Thank God, finally useful, right? Because it's exhausting to be a taker. It's exhausting not to be useful. You know, and in those moments when I'm working with my sponsees, like today, I've got 2 hours coming up. I can't wait. I'm not thinking about Wendy. Oh, my God. What a relief that is, right, to get out of self. And it says here, giving up all control is the road to freedom. When I give up control, if I give up control today of absolutely every outcome, if I give up control, I've got freedom immediately because God's running the show, I'm not. And then finally it says here, though they knew they must work with alcoholics if they're to remain sober, that motive became secondary. It was transcended by the happiness they found in giving themselves for others. So it says here, we don't just do it to remain sober with the food. We do it because it gives us happiness, and God wants us happy, joyous, and free. Somebody said to me recently, God's will, Wendy, if you want to align up with it, is that you're happy, joyous, and free. So it means that I don't just live. It means I'm happy living, living happily, right? I'm somebody, I perform on stage, I sing. I'm not a very good singer, but I absolutely love it. I absolutely bring me joy. And God says, keep going. Keep doing those things that bring you that happiness because that is my will for you. I don't want you just here hanging out until you die. I want you to be happy, 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 joyous, and free. And so I do those things that bring me that joy. And the final thing I'll say is that it's my time. So everybody have a beautiful day. Thank you. And I'll pass.
All right. Thank you, Wendy M.
Sure.
Marissa Bye-bye. E, followed by Beatrice O.
Thank you, Mo. Good morning, everyone. This is Marissa E. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater outside Los Angeles. So identifying him with Ernie G., right? He proved to be a devil-may-care young fellow. And I did look this up. So devil-may-care is cheerful and reckless. Right. So I, you know, Marissa was a devil may care young fellow, right? Whose parents, whose family could not make out whether I wanted to stop compulsively overeating or not. Right. And I come from a good family and they were very dismayed at my disease. And it talks about here, right? He suffered horribly. I suffered horribly from my sprees. But it seemed as if nothing could be done for him, right? Nothing could be done for me. And it was 11 weeks ago. You know, I'd been in OA in the rooms for 8 years, working a program for 6 years, and I binged, restricted, and over-exercised, right? The three things that really brought me to my knees and into this program, and I did that 11 weeks ago. And, you know, I woke up the next day and guess what I did again, right? I overate. And so, I feel like my higher power just brought me to my knees, right? And I consented to put down my alcoholic foods, right? And those alcoholic ingredients and those alcoholic behaviors that were leading me back. And I'm just so, so grateful, right? And here he is, right? Like the way you fellows, the way that Vision put it, the spiritual stuff made sense, you know, and I was ready to do business. And for the past 11 weeks, right, it's, I wish my ego wants to take credit, right? My ego wants to take credit for the discipline, for the calls, for the big book studying, for the late nights, for the early mornings, for the outreach. And at the same time, my higher power really gave me the willingness to do business. And I'm just so grateful, right, that I've been added to this fellowship. Right now I can come on and say I'm a recovered compulsive overeater and give that same hope to other fellows, right, who are just behind me, right, who are just right there. But like I heard on the earlier morning meeting, I'm just holding a lantern, right, and it's just like the blind leading the blind, but I've got a little more vision. And so I'm just so grateful this morning, and thank you for letting me share. I pass.
Thank you, Marissa E. And before we get to Beatrice, let me remind everyone where we are. We're on page 158, starting with the last paragraph. So you see, reading through three paragraphs on ending on page 159, ending with a way of living, thus relieving much worry and suffering. And Beatrice O, I'll take you
okay.
after you. I'll take some more names. Sorry, Beatrice.
Oh, no problem. So my name is Beatrice O from California, and I just wanted to share on this paragraph, these paragraphs about letting go and letting God. And the last few sentences where he says they experienced a few distressing failures, but in those cases, they made an effort to bring a man's family into a spiritual way of living, thus relieving much worry and suffering. So that part is really important because there's that codependency part where our family members keep trying and trying and trying, and the fact that they were able to help them find a spiritual way of living, even though their family member wasn't recovering. And the other part that really, where he says the devil may care chap, he was a devil may care chap, but he got the spiritual thing. And I think there's a saying is when the student is ready, the teacher will appear. So that was his spiritual experience, I think. And I remember when I was young, my grandmother used to say, you know, you got to turn your life over to Jesus and you got to repent. And I remember thinking in my head when she was saying that, I was thinking, yeah, I'll do that later, you know, but I'm going to party now. It doesn't matter. And I thought, I would think, you're an old lady. You partied. You had, you know, 13 kids. And so now you're telling me to accept God when you had all these kids and you lived your life and now you're old. So when I came in OA, first of all, I didn't think God was going to do anything for me. And I used to hear people say that they didn't have another recovery in them. And I used to think to myself, nah, nah, nah. I'll always have a recovery in me. So I'm getting over a 10-year relapse. And my best girlfriend had a gastric bypass. And I remember what she told me. She told me, I'm going to get a gastric bypass and I'm going to be thin or I'm going to die trying. And I want to be have a healthy mind, body, and weight and spirit. And I don't want to die trying. I want to be healthy on this side of the planet. So anyway, this was a good paragraph. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Beatrice. So, yeah,
mm-hmm.
Thank you. Gotcha. Okay, and now open up the lines for more who'd like to share.
Melanie C. Liz S.
Sherry K. B.
Linda
Patty
G.
Patty T.
Wait. I got Melanie C., Liz F., Sherry KB. Who was after Sherry?
Patty D.
Patty D.
And Patty T.
T. Oh, two. We got two Patties?
Yep.
Okay.
Oh, Linda
D
G.
T. I got you. All right. Who was that just now?
Linda G.
I got you, Linda. And possibly one more. Okay. We'll stop there. Melanie C., Liz F., Sherry KB, Patty D., and Patty T., and Linda G. Okay, so Melanie, you're on.
Hey, thanks, Mo. Good morning, everyone. My name is Melanie C. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater calling in from Oregon. I love listening to the shares this morning about how these three, you know, got together. That's been very helpful for me. So then what it took me to thinking about is the the last paragraph that we read here, number 2 on page 159, is it almost like a historical thing that happened. Bill went back to Oregon. I'm in Oregon. Went back to New York, and three stayed in Akron. And there was a surgeon, a lawyer, and a devil may care chap. And I'm thinking about how on earth are these folks going to get on with each other? You know, there's quite an interesting gathering of these folks. Now they're three together, and what strength that they had gained from each other. And of course, looking back, we can see it's all historic and where it went to from there, and how much more and how important it is to work with each other. The other thing that stuck out to me is that they didn't go alone to visit Mr. Devil May Care. There were three of them that went, and initially there were two that went to the lawyer. And what a great thing that I have been taught all along in these rooms is I don't do this alone. I come in and I'm overzealous. I'm excited about what I've learned, what's happened to me, because it shouldn't have happened to me. But I am always cautioned to, you know, check with my sponsor before I run out and do a new thing or express an idea that I might have, because I may not know just yet. I'm encouraged that when I come in this deal, no matter what my age, I have come in here with a pretty good sized load of stuff that through these steps and God's power, we're going to unpack together. But I am benefiting by having somebody else take a look at it with me. I was absolutely a devil may care chap. Now, that's awful sweet. It sounds really sweet to say it that way. But I interpret the devil may care as I was impulsive, I was compulsive, I was confrontive and inflexible and harsh and demanding, and I was full of ideas, and I wanted to change things when I first actually even came in these rooms. And I wanted to move it from here to there to everywhere because I had a better idea, even in here. Why? Because that was my baggage that I brought in here with me. And God said to me, we're going to pack this one thing at a time, and you, my darling devil may care chapette, will smooth and temper over time, but you won't do it alone. You'll check in with other people. You'll see if your ideas raise up and match up against something that makes sense with those elders that have been in these rooms for so long. And so I love it from that historical point. I love looking at it as a live story. Bill's gone back now, and he's going to build his momentum there and be in touch with these fellows, and these guys are going to hit the road running, but there's going to be some tempering with the three of them working together. And with that, I pass.
Thank you, Melanie C. Liz F., followed by Carrie
Davies. Hi, it's Liz F. from New Hampshire, and I was really very touched by this reading for a couple of reasons. I think first that, we're reminded by the fact that his parents were religious, and that didn't help, and I think that reminds us that it's not religion that this recovery is about, that the answer is about. It's the spiritual answer. And the sentence, the way you fellows put the spiritual stuff, makes sense. So here's this man who hasn't been able to recover, and yet these guys come to him with a spiritual solution, and something happens, and he is able to hear the solution, which I think is really, it's a miracle, because the spiritual solution makes sense. It really does. And it makes sense coming from those who have worked it and who have recovered from using it, from working it. And I just wanted to go back to chapter 3 and Fred, because last page of the quickly find it, where he talks about I've got to find it. I haven't marked. Here it is. He has he's summing up his experience, and this is one of the most moving things that I read in the big book. He says, quite as important was the discovery spiritual principles would solve all my problems. I have since been brought into a way of living infinitely more satisfying, and I hope more useful than the life I lived before. And that to me is a promise that I can always have if I live by spiritual principles in all areas of my life. So I was reminded of that in this paragraph, and with that I'll close. Thank you.
Thank you, Liz F. Sherry KB, followed by Patty D.
Good morning, Mo. Good morning, everybody. It's Sherry KB in Northern California. Very grateful, recovered, compulsive reader. Thanks so much for your service, Mo, and everybody on the line. What jumped out at me today is that, in the first part of paragraph five, where it says they felt they had to give others what they had found or be sunk. So, in other words, if I don't give it away, I can't keep it. I won't stay recovered unless I'm helping other people. That's a really important piece, and that willing to go to any length to stay recovered, where, you know, I didn't get that before in all the years I had done, not the steps in this book, mind you, but the years. I don't really count the years I've been around because they don't really matter. I've been around a long time, but I didn't get recovered until I did the work this way. And also that, you know, I'm not in charge of somebody else's recovery. I can carry this message, not my message, and not carry the mess, but to be of maximum service to the people, to God and people about me. And, you know, and I want to work with people who said, I'm ready to do business. I'm ready to get down. I'm ready to put the food down. I'm ready to do the work and get in the steps and get recovered. And, you know, I'm always reminding people as I'm working with them that, you know, in order for you to stay recovered, you have to help others and to set yourself to be of maximum service to people about you. And, you know, here it says, in the second paragraph, it says that though they knew they must help other alcoholics if they would remain sober. And that, you know, it is the bright spot of my life, I found. And when I used to hear that, I used to go, well, yeah, right. But it is, because I have been in situations where I was working with others and something had happened right before, and I would turn to be of usefulness to somebody else. And you know what? Things just got cleared out for me. And, you know, to see others recover from this seemingly hopeless state of mind and body is a miracle to me in itself. And that my job is to help them to get unblocked, to get them connected to their higher power, to get them to rely on their higher power, not on me, get support from me, but to recover, in other words, to rely on the higher power and to go through these steps and to be of service to others. That's how we, you know, if we don't work together, this isn't going to work. And that's what I've found. And I just love this work, and I love talking about program, and I love there's all so many ways to be of service. And what I've heard is, you know, it's not about being afraid to work with someone else. It's be afraid if you don't, because you will be back in the food eventually if you do not work with other people. That's how I know I've stayed recovered, and I'm just very grateful for that. And with that, I pass. Thank you.
Thank you. I just want to remind everybody to press star 1 to mute your phones. There's someone unmuted. Now we will go to Patty D, followed by Patty T.
Hi, this is Patty D. Can I be heard?
Yes, you can, Patty.
Okay, thank you. Hi, this is Patty D. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater in North Carolina, just outside Charlotte. What struck me about this passage today was where the young man said, I'm ready to do business. And I think what struck me, someone is still unmuted.
Yeah, I know.
Wanted
I'm
to
sorry.
Share that.
Please press star 1 to mute your phones.
So I think that struck me because when I first started in the program, I think even though I was desperate, I saw things as I saw this as another way to lose weight, and I still had that kind of diet mentality. And it took me a little while to kind of be ready to do business and really admit my powerlessness and move through those steps and really commit this to my higher power in every sense of the word and really turn it over. And I think what people have shared today is how that's so important. And if you don't do that, you keep relapsing and you keep suffering. And I'm so thankful to God that I was able to do that, that he gave me the grace to do that, because even the power to do that comes from him. And so that just really struck me, and in a lot of the shares today too. And also reaching out to others, because I know that if I didn't do that, because I kind of had to push myself to be a sponsor at the urging of my sponsor, and making that step was a little hard for me, but I knew if I didn't do it, I would cocoon again, and I would go back to just, you know, enveloping myself with myself, and I knew where that would lead, and I didn't want to go back there. I wanted to stay recovered, and I wanted to stay strong, and that only comes from sharing that. And so I'm so thankful for the program, for my sponsor, and for the people that have helped me. So if you're suffering, reach out, because that's what we're here for. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Patty D. We have 5 minutes, so I'm going to ask Patty T and Linda G to take about 2.5 each, okay? Patty T.
Thank you so much, Mo, for your service. And this is Patty T. I'm recovered in North Hollywood, California. And, wow, you know, there's so much in here. That devil may care, young fellow. That's who I try to appear as all the time, my entire life before I was 51 years old and walked in that room, you know, that first OA room. I tried to act like it didn't matter. It didn't matter to me. I was fat and happy, right? And that wasn't true. That was the lie. And then I came into these rooms only because I couldn't stand the self-recrimination and self-loathing anymore. And therapy, years and years of therapy, had not abated that, had not changed it, had not allowed me to change that. And I knew that there had to be something else, right? I tried everything, but I tried to do it alone. And it took my therapist to encourage me to come into these rooms. And I found myself here. And you know, when it says they shared their homes, their slender resources, and gladly devoted their spare hours to fellow sufferers, I can remember giving a person a ride many years ago in another organization I was a part of and feeling so much resentment on the way to pick her up. And then after I had left her at home, feeling so much guilt over the fact that I was so selfish, and I didn't know what to do about that. These rooms and new people have taught me how to give of myself, willingly or not. Sometimes I make those outreach calls because that is part of my program, and I'm not happy to have to do it. I don't want to do it. That's just the nature of who I am some days. But every time I get off that phone with another person in this program, I feel happy. I feel relieved. I feel inspired by another person's struggle and their recovery. And that is a gift, and that is a miracle. And I'm so grateful. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you, Patty T. Linda G., you'll close us out. Thank you, Linda.
Thank you, Linda G. from Massachusetts. I just want to talk a little bit about, I just never know when I'm going to be available for service. I'm a recovering compulsive overeater working the steps with a visionary. Last night, I live on an island where there's no food meetings. And so anyway, last night I went to pick up somebody who was coming back from a very bad relapse in another fellowship, and we were going to a big book step meeting, and it was on step 3. And when I walked into her house, she had thrown all the food out of the refrigerator. It was all over the floor in a fit. And her mother and her daughter were standing there, and it was the first time I met her mother and daughter. But I was in service. I helped them clean up, and I walked with the daughter to throw out a bunch of rubbish in the dark, and I explained, said to her, you're 14. When I was 14, my mother got sober, and her sponsor said someday she would be my best friend, and I hated her. Then I started telling her about my food a little bit, because her mother has shared with me that she has food issues, and she is overweight. And but I did it in, you know, a very delicate way. Anyway, we cleaned it up. I got her in my car. We got to an amazing step three big book meeting. And I'm just grateful to God that I can be of service, even if I'm in early recovery with my compulsive overeating. Thank you.
Thank you, Beatrice. Oh, no, this is Linda G. Thank you, Linda G. So we will now thank you, everyone, for your shares. We will now close with the reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. And will Mary Jane Z please read a vision for you?
Good morning, Mo. Can you hear me?
I can.
Great. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask Him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you.